Hi, this is Maddie Beeson from Durham, North Carolina and Black Twig Cider House, and you are listening to Cider Chat.
Episode 70. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Aria Wincoller, and I am your Cider MC and the producer of this weekly podcast, where we speak with cider makers, enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And this week, we are speaking to one of the proprietors behind the Black Twig Cider House. This is a cider bar in Durham, North Carolina, and that person is Maddie Beeson. There'll be more on that chat in just a moment. Ah, I do enjoy that little piece of music that I've been playing on the past couple episodes of Cider Chat. It's that water in the background and kind of soothing. And I've been thinking for a while now, you know what would be really neat is if we had a little interlude during the podcast where we just had a bit of music to listen to. Kind of in the hopes that, like myself, when you do finally get to listen to Cider Chat, you might be actually grabbing a glass and having a chat, perhaps like good friends that I hang out with every Wednesday once this podcast goes live. And you'll see me perhaps on any given week with a little hashtag Sunset Cider Club. And I've been doing this for, well, as long as Cider Chat has been in existence, and that's back in October 2015. Wow, huh? So a lot has happened between now and then. You will, with this episode, have 69 hours of podcast on cider topics. And with all that, like I do every single week, I'm hanging out. And, you know, I'll kind of go to different parts and play it. And people want to hear from Perry Pear, which I want to say is going to be coming up in this episode. Or we'll kind of pause it a little bit to talk about something, then kind of come back to the podcast. I know that maybe that's unique to me. I'm not quite sure. Perhaps you only listen to the podcast in your car while you're working out or you're out in the field. I get that. And even with that said, I imagine it might be kind of cool to listen to some nice music. So I happen to meet the artist of this particular little ditty at a pub, one of my favorite pubs. It's my local pub, in fact. And she was bartending. And it was a late night, and probably about three of us at the bar stool. And she put up some of her own music. And at that time, I didn't really realize that she did that. And I was just blown out of the water. So coming up in this week's podcast, you're going to hear the full rendition of that song. And I thought this is a nice way to share a little interlude, as I said, and also to showcase someone who I hope is an up-and-coming artist out there in the world, not only Ciderville, but the larger, broader expanse of our universe. And if this works, if you like it, I'd love to hear that. If it works for your experience of listening to the podcast, because that's really important to myself. I know I'm going to like it, so dang if you don't. And perhaps there's a musician out there who's got some cool little ditty too, who wants to put that out broadly. You know, this podcast gets a lot of play around the globe, not just U.S. base. On any given day, we could have over like 1,200 downloads just in one day. So that number is rising, and this is a nice way to help other folks get showcased out there in Ciderville. So with that said, stay tuned. Once you hear that little Diddy coming up with the music, which kind of reminds me of Sitting by the Riverside, and that is the name of the song. You know, we'll be playing the music of Emma Ayres, and there'll be a link in the show note on how you could get a copy of that tune. Oh, hold on a second, Ciderville. Palms, I'm hearing a lot of shuffling in pots and pans. Is everything okay?
It's a pair again, Rhea. He's been pulling out every single pot and pan in the cider house, looking for something.
Mr. Quince, we need some help moving this 5-gallon pot for Perry. Can you help?
What? A 5-gallon pot? What do you palms got shaking down there?
Just a little bit more to the right. A little bit more. We have it. I think my right side looks much better than my left side when I'm speaking publicly. Okay, Rhea, we're ready whenever you are to read the iTunes review and rating left by Alan.
You do know, Perry, that this is audio only and no one out there in Ciderville can see you.
That might be true in Ciderville, Rhea, but in Pearville, well, how about if everybody lets Rhea know who is here listening to this iTunes review and rating that I'm about to present by Alan. Thank you. Thank you very much. No, really, that's just too kind of you. It's enough. Pull back a little bit. Everybody take your seat.
Wow, that's pretty impressive there, Perry. Well, whenever you're ready, then let's next go to this iTunes review and rating read by Perry Pear.
Hello, this is Perry Pear, and this week I am bringing to you a 5-star review and rating by Alan Malice Meals. I think that's very clever of you, Alan, using the word apple in the middle of your name there. Very clever. Alan titles this review and rating as amazing. Alan writes, Rhea, you're the best. That's very kind of you. We do adore Rhea. She does an amazing job on this podcast. She works quite hard, and we appreciate your appreciation for her. He continues with, love these interviews and the passion you have for cider. And he says that he listened to the John Bunker interviews and they are some of his favorites. I agree with you 100%, Alan. John Bunker is amazing. And if anyone out there in Ciderville hasn't listened to John, you might want to go to episode 16 and episode 28 when John talks about apple identification when you're out there trying to identify feral apple trees. He's a wonderful man, wonderful man. Alan finishes with saying that he downloaded iTunes just to leave this podcast an official review. That certainly says a lot and means a lot to all of us here at Cider Chat Central and adds quite a bit to your final sentence in which you describe yourself as one of your biggest fans. I suspect you're talking to Rhea directly there, and I won't take it personally. Thank you so very much, Alan. I hope you have a good day, and as Rhea says, may your cup always be full, and I hope that someday soon you have a cup full of Perry. Over to you, Rhea.
Aw, that was really kind. Thank you, Perry, and thank you, Alan. I'm one of your biggest fans, too. That rocks. All right. Well, if you'd like to leave an iTunes review and rating and have it read by Perry Pear, and you would really make his day if you did, because it means a lot to the Pears, and obviously a lot of them are listening, just go to the iTunes app on your smartphone, if that's the way you are downloading a Cider Chat, go to the search button on the bottom, whether or not you are subscribed, and search for Cider Chat, and then up will come three bars. Tab that little ratings and review, and you'll be prompted then to write your own review, and you too can have Perry Pear read it. Well, now, there is something for everyone in this week's chat, whether you are a consumer, a maker, or looking to start your own cider bar. We're going to be chatting with Maddie Beeson coming right up. I actually pre-recorded this in Chicago right after he, Colin Schilling, and Sarah Silverman all did a workshop called Why You Should Open a Cider Bar and Not a Cidery. And maybe that's piquing a little bit of interest for you. I mean, the short of it is, if we don't have access to cider, the market's not going to grow. I mean, you could have your little cidery out wherever you might be, and I know that's a wonderful thing, and have your own tasting room. But if we can't get access to it, well, you're going to miss a couple things. You're going to miss the patrons, for one, and you're going to miss the educational piece that is so critical. So he offered some really good tips here for all three different parties of the spectrum to ponder, as hopefully you're sitting back, grabbing a glass now, and joining this chat. So let's get to it and meet our guest this week in episode 70, Maddie Beeson of the Black Twig Cider House in Durham, North Carolina. Well, welcome, Maddie, to Cider Chat. So psyched. We are up here in our amazing little, like, Cider Chat booth here at CiderCon in Chicago.
This booth is so fancy up here on this balcony. I feel like everybody gets to look in on you, and I feel so, I don't know, something, I feel famous.
You are.
I feel a little famous right now.
You are.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
As it should be in the world of cider, you know, all the apples and pears are happy and all the people part of it.
That's right.
You just finished a workshop at CiderCon. What
yes.
was that about?
We did a workshop entitled Why to Open a Cider Bar, in parentheses, not a cidery. Mm-hmm. And essentially, I think what that comes down to, and the, hopefully the main takeaway for a lot of people, is education. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of cideries. We have a lot of new people coming into the market. We don't have a way to get that cider to the people.
Right. Totally.
So we're trying to get more people to, you know, even if you have a cidery, don't make your tap room all about you. Make it about you and the other people involved.
Good idea.
You know, if you do 50, say, for us, our proportions were 50% your stuff, 50% someone else's. And if you can get to that portion, we feel like there's an opportunity to educate people. And not only is there an opportunity to educate people, there's an opportunity to educate yourself. And as you're tasting, you're, you know, your palate's improving, you're tasting new things, you're also sort of driving up your standards, mm-hmm. and you're improving what you want to be doing as a cidery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a brilliant, brilliant way to kind of let that move out into the world for cider all over the place, because when one cider goes up, all cideries go up.
Absolutely.
You know, I always thought a cool style of a cider bar, sometimes people think like opening a really big cider bar, but how about like that kind of Italian style where you go in for a standing like espresso and just like a little like a dim sum of, I don't know, that's probably the wrong word, but you know, little demi-tasse of cider.
Well, you have people doing flights, right? There's a lot of flights out there. Mm-hmm. I coming from a wine and a beer background as far as beverage management, I really disliked flights because I think for a lot of segments of flavor, it was hard to get into a flight, especially with wine. If you're doing wine flights, you're doing literally like a 1 to 2 ounce pour. And I don't think 1 to 2 ounce pours accomplish the goal. Hmm. You're not going to get enough into that beverage to really get excited about it. But I think when you start to get into 3 and 4 ounce pours, you can really get into that beverage,
yeah.
and you get people really excited about it. And mm-hmm. if you're doing that, you're giving people an opportunity that may not know the beverage, mm-hmm. A lot more sort of things to learn from and a lot more flavor profiles so that they can educate themselves mm-hmm. about what they like and how to order moving forward.
Right, right. Yeah, a 1 ounce pour would be like, that would make me sad. You know? What?
So sad. So sad. It's
I want
sort
to simmer
absurd.
Over it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even 2 ounce pours, to me, it's like 2 ounce pours you can save for shots.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if you, you know, true I mean, that. Like yeah. if you can do a shot in 2 ounces, that shouldn't be a beverage pour.
Right. Right. Yeah. Different beast.
Yeah.
So let's talk about who you are.
Okay.
You're from North Carolina.
I am. I'm born and raised in Durham.
Born and raised in Durham.
Wow. I left. I went to Ohio for school. Came back to Durham. Thought I was going to get back out of the market and just got involved in the restaurant business in the Durham area as a beverage manager. Originally as a sommelier in wine, and then moved into other beverage segments. Mm-hmm. Found cider about 10 years ago. I came at it from a weird way. I'm a Spanish guy by trade as far as beverage goes and also food.
Okay.
Love northern Spain and sort of what they're doing, the Basque Country, Pinchos, that whole idea. But in traveling there and finding that, I really, really fell in love with the Sagardo Teguias, the Sagardos,
like
which are the cideries in Spain. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The passion that they put into it and sort of the fun element of them, I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
And so I fell in love with it from that standpoint and then came back and looked into how to elevate just Spanish cider and realized that cider as an element really hadn't had enough growth to do anything that just involves Spanish cider. So then at that point, I started paying more attention to cider in general and just looking at cider as a segment mm-hmm. And paying attention to what was going on domestically as well as, you know, everywhere else in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And really fell in love with it and just started moving in that direction, tasting more cider than I was anything else. 3 years ago, I started saying, okay, I'm going to do this. Like, I'm gonna open an actual cider bar rather than talking the talk. I thought I was going to open a cidery for a long time. So I followed my own words and realized that in my area, there were folks that had done it and done it well. And they needed distribution and they needed people to be able to sell it. And so I looked at it and went, you know, I'm going to open something that helps this segment, helps this market.
So you opened a cider bar in Durham.
Yeah, there you go.
And how was that received? You know, what was that like? And was it hard to explain?
Incredibly well received.
It is Durham. It's a bubble.
Yeah.
A bubble of innovative people.
And, yes, definitely a bubble of innovative people. And it's got a great food background for being as small as it is. We've got amazing restaurants. You know, the quality of people that are walking in and out on a daily basis are awesome. So they're open to it. And we're literally, excuse me, right across the street from Duke University.
Wow.
So, I mean, you can walk from any number of educational buildings to our bar.
And I would if I was at Duke.
Yeah, right?
I would,
there you
totally.
Go. There you go. So, It's been really well received, and the growth has been sort of exponential. It definitely sort of started slow. It was one of those things where I think a lot of people didn't know what they were getting themselves mm-hmm. into, and then people come in, and then they go away, and they tell their friends, and people come in, and they go away, and they tell their friends, and we actually put, as far as I know, somebody tell me if I'm wrong, the first ever indoor choach in a building. So you see in the cideries in Basque Country, the way they pour their cider is literally through a choach or through a barrel.
Mm-hmm.
And they pour it in a stream mm-hmm. anywhere from probably 2 to 5 feet mm-hmm. into the glass and you catch it. And that's how you aerate it or give it a little carbon dioxide and you do shots of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I've never seen one indoors in the United States. So we actually had a plumber come in and and take a 2x10 piece of cement in our building out of it and put in a huge 2x10 floor drain so that we could shoot cider into people's glasses.
How much fun is that?
Yeah, it's fun. It's very, very fun. It's all the time. And
all the time it's like cranking out there.
Yeah, and people are, you can do it anytime you walk in the door and people really love it. Yeah. It's also an opportunity for people to walk away with an experience that they can go and tell their friends about so that they can all come back.
So are you changing over what's kind of being served then out of that?
In that space?
Yeah, in that
space. So we were, originally we were called Six Plates, and I ran that restaurant for about 9 years, and it was a small plates wine bar. And then a little under a year ago, transferred it over to Black Twig Cider House.
And I think I was asking there, I'm sorry, should I ask a little bit clearer, what are you serving in terms of like sidra coming out of...
Out of the church. So mostly Issa's Teggy, a little bit of Trabanco from time to time. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, we'll do a domestic product that's un CO2'd that hasn't been carbon.
Were you part of that poster down there from Trabanco?
No, you know I wasn't. I just stopped to look at it, and I'm like, I haven't had a chance to really like. I need to take a picture of it so I can really study it.
I just tweeted it to Trabanco because it's about shipping sidra over from that region and how to do that well.
So it looked like plastic kegs was the way to do that. Is that what you got out of that?
I took a photo of it. I have to say I did not read it yet.
Okay, so I haven't gotten a chance to read it fully either, but what I read looked like they were saying plastic kegs is the best thing.
Yeah. So what we're both talking about here is like sidra natural.
Yep.
And it does get poured from that like meter length or so.
Yep.
And when he says a shot here, cedar's not such where you kind of sit at it and like, you know, smell it and, you know, hang out and like put your hands around the glass. You're supposed to like drink it quickly because once the foam kind of comes down in the aeration, it changes the taste.
Oh, it's 100% different.
Yeah.
And I think that's why the cedra has had a hard time sort of entering the market of cider, because most people are not pouring it that way, but their clientele doesn't want to do shots.
Yeah.
They want to do 5 ounce pours or 6 ounce pours or 12 ounce pours or somewhere in that in between. Which was honestly why we created the Choach and created this drinking from the barrel, because it creates this sort of this mentality of a party, and you can actually get people to then start enjoying it the way that it was intended. So even if you're pouring it from a meter above your head to down below, but you then hand somebody essentially a 2 ounce pour of something and say shoot it, and they look at you like you're crazy because they think that shooting it is for 21-year-olds that want to drink buttery nipples or something like that, right? You know, whatever you're doing in shots these days. I don't know.
That's going to take me a while to get out of my head, but that's okay. That's good.
Unless it's Fernet, I don't. It's not something I'm shooting on a regular basis. Yeah. So.
But, you know, you would be over there and you would see that done by, you know, people of all ages. So
it's 100%. It's really the only way they're drinking it.
Yeah. Well, I could talk to you about that all day, but let's go into... seriously.
Oh, I could too. We could be here for hours just on sidra.
But we're going to start bringing in some food. And so let's talk more about what you do there and the size of the operation.
So we're 2,400 square feet.
Okay.
We're about 90 seats. We have a small kitchen, so we do sausage sandwiches from a local sausage provider that they make sausage for us. We add all the toppings and add all the flavors ourselves, all the different condiments, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Salads, sandwiches, there's a burger, a few desserts. Accessible food, yummy food, but accessible food, everyday food. Mm-hmm. We make our own fries from scratch. Mm. Things that are everyday. because we really want people to see it as an everyday place. We want them to come in and you know, we want our regulars. We want people that love cider, that rather than going to their, you know, their everyday pub and drinking the same cider because there's one cider tap in the building every day, we want them to think of it as an opportunity to come in and drink a different cider after work every day.
Perfect.
Something like that.
I want that to be my neighborhood pub.
Come on by.
I will. So how many taps do you have?
So 6 taps for cider, 2 for beer. We offer another 4 to 6 by the glass out of 750s typically, 750 milliliter bottles.
Yeah.
And those are usually smaller pours, but it's an opportunity to get different things in front of people.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the French and Spanish and even British ciders come in that format, and if we break it up into glass pours, we can make the margins we need to be able to make by offering giving people opportunity to try different things.
Okay. And in that same piece there, so you're bringing out the different education from regional out in the world.
Yes.
How about in the U.S. In terms of cider varieties? Do you know the style? Would you have one from the Northwest, the Northeast?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, like as much as we can get, especially in draft. Draft's a little tougher because the reverse logistics for people that aren't sort of bigger cider producers. It's hard for them, I think, to get out of their state.
Sure.
But we try and get as much as we can.
Yeah.
We have Schilling from Washington State, Blake's from Michigan, a few of the New York producers. And then, obviously, within North Carolina, Urban Orchard, Noble are two big producers for us.
Mm-hmm.
We use a ton of their stuff. Bull City Cider Works, which is in Durham, where we are. We use a fair amount of their stuff in keg and draft.
Right.
And there are a few more coming online. We're hoping to get Red Clay from Charlotte once they can get out of Charlotte.
Nice.
Into our market as well.
Yeah.
So
much happening down in the south. What do you call that region? Southeast.
Yeah. North Carolina is awesome because, you know, we're still high enough up, especially in the mountains, that we're producing a lot of apples. So a lot of these people are able to use juice that's from around their area if they're not even producing the juice themselves. So that's been great because I think it's, you know, but it's still a burgeoning market. We're at, like, I think 14 cideries, something like that, 16
that's
cideries. So it's pretty good.
Room for growth,
but you know,
need more cider bars.
We're not saturated.
We always need more cider bars.
We do.
So in that piece there, kind of the classic question, how do you explain cider to people? They walk in the door, they're like, What is this? And what's your standard reply?
That's a brilliant question. I mean, the great part about owning a cider bar is if they've walked in, they made that decision already. So they want to
lock
the
key behind
them. They want to know.
Yeah.
Well, they want to know. If they've walked in the door, they want to know.
Sure.
They're curious. And
so
that immediately gives me an opportunity to say, okay, what do you like to drink?
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of my standard is when you're not here, what are you drinking?
But you don't go straight out and say, "Well, this is what cider is."
No,
you don't.
I don't think you. I think there's a danger.
You don't
danger.
Say it has anything with apples or anything like that.
Sure. I mean, like, it's predominantly apples or pears, and you know, it's a
fermented
beverage. You know, that ranges probably in typically where beer does as far as alcoholic percentages. I mean, if somebody asked me a straight out conversation, but if they're just looking to find what they want to drink.
Okay. Well, that's a different question.
I guess that's a different question.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I guess I'm more likely to get that question than I am, what is cider?
Oh.
So that's a good thing.
That's interesting. Okay.
So we're a cider bar, so people are walking in the door.
Yeah.
And if they're walking in the door, I've already got them past, hopefully, what is cider?
Right.
And if I haven't, then I guess my standard answer is, it's apples most of the time. If you're defining it as apples and pears, then it's apples and pears fermented into anywhere between, I don't know, 4 and 9%.
Okay. It's a good question I know how to answer because people continue to struggle with that. So I'm always kind of curious.
Really? What are they? Why are they struggling with that? I'm not. That's not because that's not the struggle that I'm getting. The struggle I'm getting is that they don't. They think they don't like it.
Well, that's
they know what
happens.
It is.
Yeah, yeah. That certainly happens, no doubt. But I ask that to many guests on Cider Chat, and I hear a range of answers.
So, really?
And I think that's kind of Cider and Perry finding its place in the world and finding that easy answer that people feel confident and that we don't have to explain ourselves, nor do we have to apologize for the product.
Right.
And there's that sense of that. And, you know, you're talking like Shea Comfort saying, well, this is winemaking, you know, and so there's so many different stories, and I think from your perspective, it's kind of interesting. Here you have a cider bar. People are coming in, they're walking the door, and you have this, like, opportunity to open a whole world to them.
Sure. Yeah. Sure, and we have that access, so I think that, you know, we have... That question is easier to answer, I guess, from my standpoint.
Yeah.
I don't have... I don't struggle with that. It's at least... I just don't get that question very often. I guess if you're working in the market, but you're not in a place that represents cider, when you tell somebody what you do, that's probably a more difficult question to answer.
Right. Do you have Calvados, Pamu, or apple brandy?
All of the above.
Okay.
All of the above. Calvados is a little bit harder because the liquor market in North Carolina is state controlled.
Oh.
So we don't have the choices that I would love to have. We had a few from Charles Neal for a little while, and those have started to dry up. and then we've got the Corleone and a few of the really sort of standard larger house Calvadoses. Apple brandy, we have a couple that are being made in North Carolina, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. Fair Game is one of my favorite producers. That's doing apple brandy, and there are other people that are playing with things like apple brandy and Calvados in the market. Carriage Hill does a great job. Okay. So, you know, there apple brandy we're getting more of. Pomo we're starting to see a little bit more of as far as domestic Pomo. I'm starting to see a couple of those, which is really fun.
From the U.S.?
Yeah.
And they're calling it Pomo?
Yeah, in a different way. I think they're calling it, they're sort of spelling it differently. Mm. But, you know, if you don't define it, what do you define it as? What do you call it?
Well, some of these things are trademark names. So like Calvados, Champagne.
Right. But what do you call it if you, what do you call it? You gotta
Well, you know, people call, they don't, the Americans can't call it Calvados, they have to call it apple brandy or find some other sexy name than apple brandy.
Because
I think apple brandy, when I was out ice skating, when I was, you know.
Sure, it's a struggle,
talk about
right?
that. Yeah, so it's finding that language, it's going back to that again. And, you know, so that leads me back to your, you know, kind of overseeing this cider bar. What are some of the things that have really pleasantly surprised you?
Wow. I think it pleasantly surprised me. Response, just in general. People excited about trying different ciders. Mm-hmm. People excited about the educational aspect. Mm-hmm. We teach classes. I teach a class typically once a month. The first three I taught were on the history of cider and just sort of the four major cider producing regions.
Awesome.
And well, you know, we've sort of grown that. Well, England, France, Spain, the U.S. There's going to be some argument for some southern hemisphere places, but you know, for what we're seeing domestically,
those are
the four major regions.
Sure. Cool.
So we talk about I talk about the history. You know, a lot of people don't know about our domestic history as well as the international history of ciders and how deep it goes and how far back it goes. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, that's an important part of getting people back into cider is to say, you know, listen, this was the most important alcoholic beverage of like the 17th and 18th, or the, excuse me, the 18th and 19th century for, you know, domestically. And nobody knows that. Nobody's talking about it except for us, right? The cider people at CiderCon, the cider makers, the cider lovers are talking about that. But we need to sort of, you know, the more of that information that we can get out to the general public, the more people are going to go, if they were drinking that much of that in, you know, the 17 and 1800s, you know, we know the reason it disappeared. Mm-hmm. Why don't we try it again? Mm-hmm. There's got to be something to it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, getting people informed, I think, is a really big part of where we are in the cider world right now is letting people know that there's more than just the two or three that you've been seeing on tap for the last 30 years.
Accessibility is so important.
Oh yeah.
And the reason why we need more cider bars, no doubt. So do you obviously get a lot of people, tourists, or in town visiting Duke?
Yep.
What is your like guesstimate, a percentage of people who walk in the door and say, "Oh, cool, a cider bar"?
So I would say where we are right now is 50% of the people walk in and they go, "I don't really know cider. I want to know cider, but I don't know it. So tell me what it is and tell me what I should have."
Exciting, yeah.
It's awesome. And then 25% of the population comes in and says, "I love cider. Do you have this, or this?" Mm-hmm. And that's really fun because you're sort of like, awesome, no, I don't have those things, but you clearly are drinking cider on a regular basis, so let me introduce you to this. And then the other 25% comes in and says, "I'm here, but I don't like cider. Do you have anything else?" And then that percentage, what you do is you say, okay, humor me. What do you want to drink right now? And they'll say, "I want a beer," or they'll say, "I want a wine," or they'll say, "I want a cocktail." And then, you know, for cocktails, I've got cider cocktails. I've got traditional cider cocktails like a Stone Fence, you know, I've got untraditional cocktails like the one I served at the Northman last night. Mm-hmm. So,
what was that one that you served at the Northman?
So at the Northman, I ended up using, typically in my bar, I use Fair Game Brandy because it's out of Pittsburgh, which is about 30 minutes away from me.
Nice, local.
We used Yohara Bay last night, mm-hmm. Apple Brandy, mm-hmm. and so we used Yohara Bay, and then Pedro Ximenez Sherry from El Maestro Sierra, which is a richer sort of almost like cream sherry, but more defined, mm-hmm. and sort of very round and a little bit sweet and raisiny.
Getting thirsty here.
Yeah, and then fresh lemon juice, fresh ginger syrup, and two dashes of Angostura bitters, served with a little bit of pickled ginger on the side.
Pickled ginger on the side?
Yeah, like sushi ginger. So you get the aromatics from the ginger that really sort of, you know, helps with the aromatics of the cocktail. But you get this nice, round, sort of rich, yummy cocktail.
Oh, shaked up, served
shaken,
over ice.
Shaken, served neat.
It's neat, okay.
And we strain the ice chips to really give it sort of that clean flavor.
Oh, that sounds like a lovely, lovely drink. So, yeah, you have some nice versatility there.
Thank you.
When you're looking for ciders to bring in to your establishment, what's your criteria?
Wow.
So there's commercial cider makers listening to this right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Who are thinking like, I'd love to get my cider into a cider bar. How do I do that?
So we've started with certain criteria that we've tweaked over time and that we're continuing to tweak and advance. right now we're trying to make sure there's no concentrate in the building. But we're actually changing that too because we have a few folks that are using their own concentrate back sweetening with that and making really great ciders. And so we're having to tweak how we define what our buying practices are and what our buying standards are. We're still working on that, honestly. Yeah. I mean, we're 9 months in and we're still sort of trying to define that. You know, clearly we're trying to avoid high fructose corn syrup. Mm-hmm. We're trying to avoid the natural flavor phenomenon that everybody sees.
The natural flavor.
Anything that's listed as natural flavor on a box or a can or anything like that.
Sure.
No dyes, no added, you know, no added flavorings. Mm-hmm. Typically what we're looking for are added, I should clarify, added flavorings that aren't flavors that you're advertising as intended.
I see.
It's hard. It's honestly one of the hardest things that we struggle with at Black Twig.
What to bring in?
What to bring in, but how to define. Because, listen, here's an easy way for me to put it into perspective. There was a long period of time where, as a beverage manager in the wine world and the beer world, I ran beverage programs the way that I wanted to drink. I did that for a long, long time. And I was really proud of the list that I was putting out there, specifically in wine, but also in beer, and thought they were really fun and geeky and snobby and, I mean, maybe not snobby, I don't like snobby, but really geeky and, like, people, really geeky lovers of wine and beer could get really excited about the list that they were walking into. But the problem was, over time, what I was doing was alienating a population that I could be serving. And instead of serving them, they were walking out of my bar because I wasn't offering, say, you know, Rombauer Chardonnay. Mm-hmm. Rombauer Chardonnay is a relatively oaky Chardonnay. There are a lot of people that like that. It's not something that I want to drink on a regular basis. But if I'm not offering that to them and I'm not offering them a close alternative at a price point that is comparable, I'm failing them as a customer base. I'm failing them as an opportunity to get them into the segment, to get them into the market. And the same thing goes with beer. For a long time, I have a craft beer bar. And, you know, I've had that for about 4 years. And for the first three, I didn't have a single domestic, you know, Budweiser, Miller product, Coors product, anything like that in the building. And I... again, for the same standards and practices that I'm talking about now, looked at it and went, you know what? The problem is I can't duplicate that flavor profile at that price unless I'm carrying one of those beers.
Yeah.
And so now I carry Coors Light because I don't carry it on my tabs and I don't advertise it. I don't put it up in big lights I don't want you to drink that.
Wall.
I want you drinking craft.
Sure.
I want you drinking something that's made locally or something, you know, that I think has typically better practices as far as what they're making and how they're making it. But if I can't get you there and that's really what you want to be drinking and I don't have that, then I've failed you. And I feel like that's the same in cider the way that it is in beer and the way that it is in wine. If there's a flavor profile that you're looking for that some of the larger producers that may be using concentrate, that maybe using cheaper methods, but they have a flavor profile that is specific to those ciders that I can't reproduce at a similar price point from a local provider. Now, I think that in cider, it's a little bit easier to reproduce those flavors, some of them. But for instance, concentrate and some flavorings, I think, tend to give off this very cotton candy kind of flavor. Well, there are people that really like that flavor.
No doubt.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah,
that's okay for those people.
Yeah.
And if I can't produce that in a craft cider in some way or form at a price point that balances at that price point, then I'm failing them by not carrying something that does that.
People are going to be very kind of almost like religiously going towards that.
Sure, and if I don't offer it to them the first time, some of them are going to stay, and some of them are definitely not coming back.
They're not coming back, yeah.
So even if that's what I get them the first time, and then they go, well, I can go, and I know I like that, so I can go there, and I'll get that if I like it, or maybe I'll try something else.
Right.
But I don't get that opportunity if I don't offer that to them the first time around.
Right, yeah.
And I think you'll find that different people, especially in cider bars and tap houses and things of that nature, have different buying practices.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of it's based on education of your customer. Some of it's based on region and access to cider. And some of it's just based on what you want to be doing and sort of what your goal is.
Mm-hmm.
What Colin and Sarah and I just talked about in the presentation was have buying standards, have buying practices, and follow them. We're not going to define them for you, but know what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And then follow them to the T as best you can. Sometimes you have things that slip through the cracks based on what you think your practices are.
Mm-hmm.
But follow those practices, whatever they are, as best you can, and define them.
Mm-hmm.
And define them for your customers as well as for yourself.
Right. Your patrons coming in, what is their makeup? Is it gender-wise, male, female? What's like the commonality there, the medium age?
I'd say it's almost 50-50. It's okay. Probably younger because we're a university. We're not getting the under 21s. We're not getting the under... undergraduates aren't as often, although we do get some.
Mm.
We get more graduate students to young professionals, so that millennial age is a lot of what we're dealing with. But I would say a major segment of what we're dealing with is 40 to... 25 to 40.
Okay.
But we're seeing a fair amount over 40
over
as well.
40? Well, that's great. I mean, the whole, gamut we want at the cider bars. Are you finding, though, and this is just my kind of curiosity, and my hunch is that cider has now made it easier for, if you're going out on a date, both, if there's a guy and a gal going on a date, it's like, oh, excellent, now...
There's cider. Rather
we have
than the guy's going to drink the beer and the girl's going to drink the wine.
Yeah. Do you find that? Or the gal's walking and saying, I want cider because it's kind of close to the wine. And, oh, aren't we lucky there's some beer for you to drink. You could have your IPA.
Yeah. I think that we're still sort of I think more often than not, I don't know, it's probably 50-50.
Great.
I think that
great.
Couples are coming in, and I would say 50% of them are, both of them are thrilled to be drinking cider. And I'd say the other half, the girl's coming in and saying, I'm so excited to be drinking cider, and the guy's saying, can I have one of those beers over there?
Yeah. Is there a particular cider that you're saying, we always have to have this here available, because it's the most, kind of like what you're talking about before... That kind of, I would kind of like kind of that gateway cider, but is there another necessarily?
Sure, the gateway cider for us, for whatever reason that we can't keep in stock and we fly through when we put it on tap, is Blake's El Chavo, which is
crazy. Are you kidding me?
No.
Wow, that's like a hot cider.
It's really hot cider.
Is it because of the food that you're serving?
It is a Michigan cidery, and we gained access to it probably within the last year and a half. And I can't keep it in stock.
Any theory?
I have no idea. I have no theory on that whatsoever.
How are you serving that, and what kind of...
12-ounce.
A 12-ounce glass.
12-ounce, and we fly through it. It's like a 6-barrel in a day and a half. It's gone.
Well, that kind of defies everything of just like doing that, like single variety, just only like really apple forward.
Sure. Yeah, no. Listen, I love single varieties. I love this, I love the Foggy Ridges and the Farnham Hills of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And Slyboro and all these guys that are growing their own apples. They're orchardists. Mm-hmm. They're cider makers. They're making single varieties. They're making very, very defined ciders that are very important to them. And the flavor profiles show through on all of those, mm-hmm. no question.
Wow.
But they're not all at a price point that are accessible to the everyday cider drinker.
Bingo.
And rightly so, because of the amount of work they're putting into it, yeah. At no point do I want them to charge any less for their right. product, because yeah. there's got to be a defining break yeah. between, you know, what Diane is doing at Foggy Ridge mm-hmm. and, you know, what Andrew's doing at Blake's. Mm-hmm. And both of them need to keep doing it in order for us to have those gateways, to have
Absolutely.
The people that are accessing the different styles and the different flavors. But those flavor ciders are kill it for us.
That's
Noble
amazing.
Makes a chai cider that when we get it in, we fly through as well. And it's
wow.
delicious. It's really
exciting.
Tasting.
It's exciting for people to try that.
Yeah.
And maybe it's not so much about the cider. Maybe it's the palate and that speaks to the brain that says, wake me up. Let
sure.
me keep on being the explorer out in the world. Help me out here, buddy. I want to try something new. And it's not speaking about the product necessarily, but the excitement in the mind. I mean, I'm
right.
just guessing here.
No, I think that's true.
I think people
get really excited about those different flavors, and
yeah.
they see cider as a one man band.
Yeah.
And then when you offer them those flavors, they change their mind.
Yeah.
And then. The progression there, which is what I love, is that if you can get them into the flavored ciders, then you can take steps, and it's kind of a reverse engineering, but what you end up doing is you get them into the flavored ciders so they're back into the segment market, and then you bring them back into those single varietals. You bring them back into those drier ciders, those orchard ciders. And you get them back into those segments, and then they're acknowledging that there are flavor profiles within those single varietals that are very different than the plain apple cider that you've had previously. Then you actually taste those differences once you've gotten past the flavored ciders. But I find that new cider drinkers, you have a harder time getting them from what they've had before to a single variety or a single flavor, mm-hmm. you know, just apple cider,
right.
whether it's still or carbonated, it still tastes like apples. And there's a palate simplicity to that.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to get people to get into paying attention to the differences between, you know, plain apple cider at $3.50, $4 a bottle versus plain apple cider at $8 a glass.
Right.
And there's a big difference between those two ciders.
Absolutely.
But if you can't, you know, like there's a level of simplicity within that drinker that's going to be difficult to get them from that $3.50 bottle to that $8 mm-hmm. glass and understand why they're making that jump and recognize the differences between those two ciders. But those flavor ciders and that flavored cider segment gives you the opportunity to do that.
Yeah. Wow. So fascinating. So can you leave us with some like tips for a cider bar? You know, people are thinking like, I want to open up a cider bar and, you know, what should I really go for first and what should I like really avoid?
Okay.
All right. Whatever, you talk about whatever, but I'm kind of curious about that.
I think you want to think about food in some way or form, because I think cider is the best pairing beverage in the alcoholic market.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to offend all kinds of people by saying that, but that's my personal opinion. So if you're not offering some sort of food, doesn't necessarily mean you need a kitchen. Have a cheese plate. Have, mm-hmm. you know, buy some local snacks from people that are doing fun, different snacks.
Absolutely.
You know, we have something that we call Choch Mix that is popcorn. It's basically Cracker Jacks on steroids.
Oh, my goodness.
So we make our own caramel.
Oh, yeah.
That we add cayenne to.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness.
And then
wow.
we douse it in a cheddar cheese sauce. And a cheddar cheese powder.
Oh my goodness.
So it's like Cheetos meets Cracker Jacks with some spice.
Oh, stop already.
And it's awesome. And we sell a ton of it. And,
I'm sure you do.
And people really like it. And honestly, I don't know. Maybe it would be okay with some of the beers that we sell on a regular basis, but it wouldn't work with wine almost at all. Mm. And I feel like
the cayenne
cider
could kind of work.
Yeah, the cayenne, that spice. Wine struggles with spice.
Yes, yeah.
Unless you're dealing with sweet, and a lot of people don't want to be drinking sweet Riesling all the time. Mm-hmm. So,
wow.
So I think food is an important portion. You know, even if it's cold snacks, things that you can offer to give people. Plus, it gets people in the door because they can eat or they can snack at the very least.
Do most people expect a cheese plate?
Do they expect it?
Yeah, or order it? Is that like
No.
No?
No, I think more people order the choch mix because for us, we use local cheeses. So our cheese plate's $15, but our choch mix is $4.
So the
if you want a snack, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
We make Cajun boiled peanuts. Are you familiar with a boiled peanut?
Well, I do know what a boiled peanut is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
By definition, we all sort of know what a boiled peanut is, right? But it's a southern delicacy. So it's literally a peanut that's salted and boiled in water over a period of time. It's done in the shell, but you shell it and then you eat the peanut. The peanut becomes softer in consistency. It's something you either love or hate, but a lot of Southerners love it. So, and it's a fun flavor and something a little bit different.
Yeah. Imagine it goes well with cider too.
Yeah, it's great.
The salt, the, you know, savory.
Absolutely.
All right there.
Yeah.
So food?
Food, I think, is important.
what to avoid?
Make sure you've got enough different profiles and flavor profiles to offer to the segments, you know, and the different people that you're trying to access. I think that's the biggest thing. Talk to distributors, figure out where your ciders are. Depending on where you are, it might be hard to access all of the cider that you want to, but you probably, at this point, no matter what state you're in, can access enough cider to create a cider bar. But make sure you have your ducks in a row and that you know where you can get all of that cider before you go, okay, let's rent a space. Let's lease a space. Let's buy a building. Mm-hmm. Whatever you're going to do.
Well, you had the primo spot. I mean, right across from Duke University.
Yeah.
My goodness, that's like Grand Central Station.
Location's huge.
Location's huge. I mean, that's the other piece. I mean, you know, you could build, if you build it, will they come?
Yeah, If you can, it would be nice. I mean, obviously, any space that requires that gets a lot of access and a lot of walking traffic or a lot of traffic in general is going to be more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So you're taking a bigger chance.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But if you've got people walking by, you've got people that are willing to try.
Yeah.
And having access to the people is what you need the most. So, I mean, I would say location is very important. Know where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can control your cost mostly with labor and with inventory.
Mm-hmm.
But know what you're doing and know, you know, if you put your space in a high traffic area, chances are you're going to know how well it's going to work in the first 6 months.
Right. Well, I always feel, having covered beer, you know, beer bars and bars and all that for many, many years now, that it has a lot to do also with the publican, the person who owns the particular bar, the presence there, the welcoming, the service. And I have a feeling that you spend a lot of time doing that too, both as yourself, but also educating the folks serving, which is really, really critical.
Sure.
How much time do you spend with that?
I spend less than I used to, luckily, because I have an amazing general manager who's here with me today as well as last year, and she's cider certified. Yeah, Amy Loria, she's amazing. She's great at what she does, and she does more of the training than I do these days, but she spends a lot of time getting the staff up on what we're drinking, what we're doing. and that sort of stuff. I concentrate more of the education of the public, but she makes sure that the people that are there know what they're tasting and know what they're drinking.
Perfect. Well, Maddie, I want to really thank you for informing us on this piece. It's like we all just kind of went to the seminar a little bit that you did and getting a sense of going down to North Carolina, you know, which isn't too bad. A lot of those snowbirds going back and forth through,
that's,
you know,
exactly right,
up north, coming down, stopping in Durham and go to your cider bar.
Please. We'd love that.
The location is really, really easy. We'll have that, the links in the show notes.
Yeah.
So folks could find out, put
great.
That in their little GPS and
come on down.
Have a destination.
That's right. Come say hi. Thank you so much.
That was quite a pleasure sitting down and having a good chat with Maddie. And if you'd like to see what a choate looks like, he referred to this in terms of the barrel and what that looks like to be pouring it into a glass, do go to the show notes page for this episode, number 70, and you'll see some photos there of the Black Twig Cider House and Maddie himself. Lots of good tips, and I hope we do start seeing more cider bars popping up all across the world, not only the U.S., but everywhere. I think we really need them. And I'd also like to give a big shout out to the folks who support this podcast on Patreon. Right now, we're still hovering under $100 a month, which, you know, I'm not sure how many people out there in Ciderville work for $100 a month. Yeah, it's kind of tight. So if you are an avid listener of this podcast and find value, I'd like to invite you to join in with other patrons. There's different levels of membership into that, and you get some fun kickback too, like a Cider Chat baseball cap or a t-shirt. And I'm trying to get up that critical mass to start doing some fun swag giveaway. I have an amazing poster from Bonnie Doon Vineyard on different apples. It's just an amazing, amazing poster. So check that out at Cider Chat Patreon. That's spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. And of course, Current Cider, who is part of the Cider Going Up campaign. They have been an avid supporter for ever since I launched that page. So a big tip of the hat to them. And whenever you go out, make sure you do ask for Current Cider. If you like to see the Cider Chat Cider Going Up campaign page, just check it out at ciderchat.com. Well, I have to head down into the old cider house and put back all the pots and pans, I think. It'll be interesting to see what exactly I do find. You know how those pears can be. They're probably still down there enjoying some Perry right now. But that's the way it rolls in Ciderville. In the meantime, hang till the end of this and you'll get to hear that song by Emma Ayres. It's called Riverside. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
All my days I have lived by the riverside. Old tin roof, Queen Anne's Lace, skeleton pines, painting the expressions of all the pretty faces that pass me by. Some say I'm a dreamer, always want what I can't find. Thank you. to belong on your doorstep. I cannot stay. Spur, I'm no follower.